Accession number 30396, Mr. Jim Dunphy, Reel 2.
Yeah.
Now, we're just talking about your time in the steelworks. I mean, how long were you working in the steelworks, all told?
Probably another... Well, I worked from 15 to 16, day work, then 16 to 17, shift work. Then my father died. And, of course, once my father died, we decided that the best thing to do would be to go over Ireland to Ireland, Southern Ireland, and tell his relatives, you know.
And he just died from what? Hard life.
He did, yeah. You know, they used to stick him in this wagon that had this pig iron, you know, £25, £25, £50 pig iron. And they reckoned to stick him in one of these big trucks and three other blokes in another, and he'd be finished first. You know, he was a hard worker, without a doubt, you know. He was a hard drunk, and he smoked bloody woodbines. He must have smoked 80 fags a day, I reckon, because he used to wake up overnight smoking fags. And he used to go over the... They all went over the pub out of the steelwork, straight into the pub, and I'm sure the first three pints, they never even tasted it. They had that much dust in their throat, you know what I mean? Because I remember he had this little Irish mate of his who was... Funny, my old man never sort of impose his size on anybody. But he used to pick this little bloke up who started a fight and walk him out the door with him under his arm, you know. And Big Jim, they call him, he was. I remember running, and anybody stopped us and they give me like a shilling here. He would give them 2 shillings for their children, you know what I mean? He was like that. And the other thing, when we went to mass, he'd be at the same time. And when we come home, it would be, what was the sermon of the priest? And he'd have his belt in this end and a catechism in this end. And he'd want you to know all the catechism or wall up. Now, so I had some beautiful... I used to go into school and I'd say, and they'd say, my old man didn't have to give me a beat. I'd say, yeah, well, look at this. See where the belt come round here and then it come round on the inside of my thigh. And I'd have this big mark all around there, you know.
Now, he died in 49.
He died in 49,
yeah. You and your mother and the rest of the family went to... Where'd you go to in Ireland?
Yeah.
Back to Waterford?
No. Only me and my next brother up, Nicholas. We went over to Ireland to tell the relatives that he died, you know, and...
Did you stay there? So you left your job anyway?
Yeah. We stayed there a bit. My brother got a job in the Peat place and...
Whereabouts in Ireland were you?
Same place, Mullabat, you know. That's where his relatives come from, Mullabat, and my mother's relatives come from Ferrybank, but... We didn't go and see.
Mullabat.
Yeah, Mullabat. We went and saw his relatives. Then we went down and see her relatives. I remember because we had these trench coats in, and they thought me and my brother were IRA coming in for some reason or other, you know. And I asked for a drink of water, and he went out and he brought this water. And my brother said, "Hang on a minute," he said, "Don't drink that." And I said, "Why not?" He said, "Didn't you hear the chain flush in the toilet when they brought you the water?" And I went, "No, I didn't." He said, "Oh, you know where it comes from then, don't you?" And I said, "Oh, I don't think I'll have that, thanks."
Now, did you start working while you were out there?
No, funny enough, my aunt gave me the money to go home. So I went home to Barra. And then, if I remember rightly, then Nick came home around about the same time. And when I was about... must be not about 17 and 2 months or so, we hitchhiked up to London, you know, and I got a job scaffolding, you know.
So you went to London, what, in 1949?
Yeah.
Now, what was your work like scaffolding then?
Yeah, it was all right. I used to like it, you know. Of course, you get the Spider-Man. Occasionally, they would drop their, like, spanners, you know, and you got that spike at one end with a... what's it for the... And they said, "Don't worry, I've done that on purpose." And you go, "I bloody bet you did," you know. And you get on the scaffold, and sometimes the people who got the scaffolding people, they wouldn't get proper scaffolders. You know, they get, like, instead of getting a foreman, they get a scaffolder and said, like, where was it? Hackney Maternity Hospital. What they got a scaffolder, but not a foreman scaffolder, just a scaffolder and 2 labourers. And they said, "Can you put the scaffolding up around this maternity hospital? Yeah, yeah, certainly. No trouble at all. And they did. The painters went in, they done the painting, and then the glaziers come along, and what did they do? They took the scaffolding out the window so they could put the paint in, but unfortunately, there's nothing holding the bloody scaffolding, right? So they done that to all the windows, of course. Then me and this other bloke, and there was these three brothers. One was a worker with me. The other bloke, he was the bloke who went looking for jobs, and the other bloke was the bloke who done the papers, you know. Now, this bloke who was with me, when we put up cradles, he used to jump off the roof into the cradle and say, that's how safe that cradle was. I put that cradle up, it's safe. But when we was doing this job, we was right up about, I think, six or seven floors. I don't know, I can't remember. Undone this 20-foot table. The whole bloody stuff went like that. Because it wasn't attached, you know what I mean? So quickly tied up. Don't undo that one, whatever happens, this bloody whole side will fall down, you know what I mean? So, I was living in Romford Road then.
Where's that?
200 Romford Road. In Romford? Yeah, in Romford, yeah.
Is that where you were living when you moved back to London then?
Yeah, yeah, me and my brother, we lodged there with this Irish family. And they used to have, you know, quite a few Irish blokes there. And we used to go out. Working there, I can't remember what my brother was doing. He was probably driving somewhere.
And were you enjoying the work as a scaffolder?
Yeah, I did, yeah. You know, being young, and I suppose in a way it keeps you fit as well. Scaffolding, running up and down scaffolding and sliding down the ladders and that, you know.
Now, how long were you doing that for?
I was doing that till I got called up.
So when would that be?
That was June. I was called June 2 squad. That was what the squad I was in.
So June 50?
So it was 1950, and it was the... I suppose that must be the end of June, because presumably they had a June the 1st, but we were June the 2nd squad.
Now tell me, what was the process of you being called up? Do you know what I mean?
You got a letter to say you're to report at so-and-so for National Service.
You didn't have a medical?
Yeah, and you went and got a medical, you know, and they got the old needle out, and a couple of them went, bang, you know, but it didn't matter to me, you know, I'd already been around most of the country. So,
and yeah. Did you have any choice as to what you were going into at all?
I wanted to learn to drive like my brother, so I said, put me down for the Remy, so that was definitely the infantry.
Now, where did you have to report to?
I can't remember. It's definitely somewhere in London, obviously. But
where did you do your basic training then? You don't know?
I do, yeah, in Ballykinler, Northern Ireland.
Yeah. So who was that with?
That was with the Inniskillen Fusiliers. I've got a photo of me up there. In fact, that's the only photo. Well. My main photo, when I come home after my basic training, my mother said to get a photo done, and I went to the studio and got a photo done, you know.
So how did you end up in the Inniskillen Fusiliers? Were you just put in them?
Pardon?
Why the Inniskillen Fusiliers? They just put you in
them? Yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, I think most of us weren't put down with, learn to drive, get in a Remy, you know. Right, okay, infantry.
Now, do you remember the name of the barracks at Ballykinler?
I don't know, no.
It's all right. Now what do you remember about, you know, you go out there, how did you get there? It's quite a journey, although
yeah,
you travelled a lot.
Up to Scotland, then over to Northern Ireland by boat, you know, and...
Did you meet the rest of the draft on the way? I mean...
Yeah, of course, we all, you know, there's people from Manchester. In fact, there were people from Southern Ireland as well, you know. Better than whatever job they had, so we're joining the army, you know.
Were you worried about going to... I mean, you were a Catholic. Was there any worry about going to Northern Ireland?
No, wasn't
bothered, no.
No,
now, what was your... You know, when you get there, you're a civilian, and when you'd had a lot of experience of life by then, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it like when you first walk into the barracks? How you treated, how you received?
It's just like, I suppose, like a lodging house, really. You think... When you walk in, first of all, and you see all the lines of beds, you know, and that's your bed, you get on it, you know, no problem. And then you meet the sergeant, of course.
What was the reception like from him? Was he shouting and bawling?
Was he?
Like?
he was a sort of, yeah, funny enough, it's when he was training, there's only on square bash, you know.
I'll come to reception. Yeah. What, you know, when you first met him, what were you?
Well, you know, he was definitely shouter. He was a shouter, you know. You're going to hear this, whether you like it or not, and I'm going to instill into you the army rules. And this is the rules, and you've got to, and you, if you have any breakages, you're going to pay for them, and you've got to do this, and you've got to do that, and you've got to wear so-and-so, and when we say otherwise, you'll end up on fatigues, and you don't want that, do you? And
now, what about kitting out? What did you get given?
What?
Kitting out. Kitting out.
Kitting out, yeah, oh, well, it was, let's see, your size, cop that, your size, cop that, yeah, and I'll put that on the other line. And you go out and say, this trouser seems a bit long for you. Well, roll them up then, you know. And, well, put me in your putties, you know. And
do you remember what they gave you, what you got at that time?
No, I remember, I think we got two lots of uniform, and they give us our bedding. You know, you had like these biscuits, I think they called them in them days. You got three biscuits, or two biscuits, I can't remember. And you put them down, and that shows that when they come for the inspection, you put them out all nice and neat. And funny enough, we got a couple like national servants who were like, you know, oh, I'm really going to polish this, you know. And then you get people like me saying, oh, bloody hell, what have I got to get this hot spoon over this sudden boot for, you know. And, well, this is the way you do it. You get this candle, you know, the end of the spoon, you heat it up. And they say, and these are South African boots, and they're really oily. So you really have to get that spoon hot to get all that oil out, and you know. Oh dear, I don't know.
And then tell us how you. We'll do how you got ready for a kit inspection. We might do it all in there. How would you get ready? I mean, how would you polish your boots after you got the bumps up? They're the little pimples you get.
Yeah.
Up,
right? Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
Then how would you polish them up? I mean, because people don't polish their boots like that now.
No, really. No, no. You definitely get the chamois out, and you'd be polishing away. And that sergeant, he'd want to see his face in your boot, and if he couldn't, you know, he'd be ranting and raving something, and you'd have to do three times around the square or whatever, you know. But, you know.
What about the rest of your kit? How would you prepare that? I mean, Blanco, do you remember
Blanco?
What was that?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Can you explain what it was?
Pots of Blanco. You know, you go in there, you say, what have I got to do? You got a Blanco, I've got a Blanco. What's that? You have to get these tins, and they. Now get your toothbrush out, and you get that on there, and then you put on, oh yeah. And don't forget, once you've blanked it all, then you've got to polish all the brass on it. You know, you've got the two things at the back, the clips on the front, you know. You've got to polish that up so it's shining, and everybody will be happy. But if they're not, and then there's going to be an inspection. Okay, now you've got to get your blankets in a certain way. You've got to get all your laces have got to be rolled around like that, and it got to be nice and neat and everything. And if the sergeant saw anything that was wrong, he'd get his stick and he'd go, I don't like that, and that'd end up on the floor, all of it, and he'd do it again. So, needless to say, we were all, and of course,
so
the thing
is,
you
had to lay your beds out in a
absolutely.
Set way, didn't you?
Oh,
do you remember
blimey,
how it was?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. You have to do it, you had to fold your beds in a certain way, then when they were doing inspections, you put one biscuit on top of the other biscuit, so that you'd have an empty bed this way, and the two biscuits with that, then you'd have the blankets all folded neatly and stuffed under neatly, and all like, you know, the way I've seen them in the pictures where they put a coin on. You didn't do that, but believe me, they had to be exactly right, or else, you know.
What about cleaning the room? What was the room like? You know,
it was just like a big Nissen hut, I suppose, really. You
was
know.
It a hut? Not
yeah,
a hut, yeah.
Yeah, a big hut.
And how clean would you have to get that, the stove?
Yeah,
the
yeah, floor? Yeah, to get the mops out and everything out and really give it a good going over. And he'd be around.
With his finger.
I've seen this dust in. Who cleaned this? You know, like that. And of course, you had to be careful, because if you made a mistake, he was inclined to keep everybody in. So then you wouldn't be the friendliest person there, but they'd all be going, your bloody fault, you know, what's the matter with you, so-and-so. And the other thing about the army is, when I joined, or when I got called up, it was 18 months. Guess what? While we were doing our basic training, they moved it up to 2 years. Oh, you should have heard the word. The air was blue. and the air was double blue. We couldn't believe it. What? And of course, we
get... Well, that was because of the Korean War, was it?
Yeah, presumably, yeah. And
you didn't know.
Yeah. And we was getting 25 shillings a week then, you know. And I used to send 10 shillings home to my mother, you know, because she was a widow, you know. And I thought, if I get killed, at least she'll get a pension because, you know, she'd be relying on me for me 10 bob a week, you know. So, you know.
So what would you spend your pay on?
I suppose mainly
you wouldn't have much food. Left.
Food mainly, a few drinks, but not much. You know.
Well, let's look at the way we look at it is through a typical day. Your basic training, yeah, because you pick a lot of the things.
Yeah,
so what time would your day start? You know,
6 o'clock in the morning. You get up, and they want you to go out and do some PT and, you know, do some running around and that, and then you go back. Of course, you had to be shaved and all that, you know, before you went out. So they'd want you to be in a kit form to do PT. You do your PT, then you rush back to the barracks and you get your clothes on, go down to breakfast.
Now, what was the food like overall? I mean,
crap.
Now, why? What? Because you know what I mean.
I don't know.
What would you get for each meal, and how? What was wrong with it?
I suppose mainly like a porridge and. That's all. I can mainly remember porridge. It seems to be the main sort of thing that they give you. And but I'm sure the people who were cooks, maybe they never cooked in their life till they got in the army, and they say, "Your feet's sore, you better go in the cookhouse," you know, something like that. And they hadn't a clue. And
so you get porridge. What else do you get? Bacon and egg, or
anything? Yeah, something like that. As far as I remember, but funny enough. Them 16 weeks, I can't really remember all that much about food. I remember.
Fair enough.
I remember, like, the come to the cookhouse boys, that was a favourite call. And we would, you know, but.
You don't remember the food much. We'll leave that.
No.
Now, what about after? So you've had your breakfast. What next?
What about?
After breakfast, what next?
Yeah, well, we'd be out down to the square doing a bit of square bashing.
Now, can I ask you about drill? How did you take to drill? Foot drill, rifle drill, basic drill?
I was fine, yeah, I was fine. Unless I was behind this Cypriot lad who was absolute murder. He was the only bloke I know who would swing his arm forward when his left foot went forward. Everybody else, when your right foot went forward, you swing your left arm. But he would do left arm, left foot, right arm. And believe me... If you were behind him, it was absolutely murder. And, of course, the sergeant would say, Kukuli, get behind at the back. Well, he'd be at the back when you were going that way, but he'd be at the front when you were going that way. And you could tell, as soon as he got to the front, everybody would be losing step all over the way. He was murder, he was, absolutely.
Did he get better, or...?
Yeah, eventually, you know, but it took a long time for him, you know. The sergeant would be screaming at him, you know.
Did you? So you were all right. Did you enjoy drill? Some people do, some people don't.
Yeah, I suppose I did. Don't forget, I'd been trained a lot in bombed houses. So I quite liked the... Not so much all that shouting, I suppose, really. But I liked the fact that we were like a body of men who gradually... got closer, you know what I mean?
Did you
I never knew him, you know. And
did you understand why you had to do so much drill? I mean, at the time, or was it just accepted?
Well, we knew about the Korean War because the sergeant would say, when we went into the bayonet practice, he would say, now pretend I'm a bloody great Korean, right? Now, there was one poor sod there. What was his name? Ball is his surname. Now, he'd had an apprenticeship, but he... For some reason or other, I don't know, he stopped it when he was 20. So when he got called up, he was 20. He'd only done 16 weeks basic training and they sent him to Korea because he was the age. You see, all the rest of us were 18, you know, 18 and a bit, you know, that sort of thing.
Now tell me about, well, we'll go through the weapon. You'd have weapons training.
Oh,
Tell me about the bayonet training first. Then.
Yeah, well, they had the old bags up and that, you know, you had to charge in and was screaming and shouting, you know, and he was always pretending I'm a great big Korean coming at you, and he's gonna, and what you're gonna do about it? Stick it in, pull it out, give him the backstroke. He was, yeah. And he was good, I suppose.
So that's really bad. What about rifle training? You know, shooting. How
yeah,
do you do that?
I was a first class shot.
Tell me how they taught you. Why were you so good? Because most people aren't first class shots, you know.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I suppose. I don't know. Maybe it was something to do. In my youth, I had a bit of a fascination with knives, which my father didn't like. And of course, my sister would say, "Daddy, James has got another knife." Wallop, crash, bang.
Well, why would that help you with the rifle, though?
Well, I used to like throwing them. In fact, when I was in the army, one of my mates stood against the door while I slung bayonets around him. I wasn't a bad shot, you know. So
you think that gave you the hand-eye coordination?
Yeah, I suppose so, And maybe the fact that I worked so early, I suppose, 14, you know, and moving them bricks around, you know, you had to be speedy and you had to make sure that the bricks had certain gaps in them when you were laying them down, yeah. So I suppose, in a way, that all helped me get a better shot.
What was it like on the ranges for the rifle?
I used to like it, except I didn't like the Fiat. They had this anti-tank gun, Fiat. It was a so-and-so, it was.
Tell me what that was like to fire.
It was like you got kicked in the shoulder by a bloody great horse. Hard. Oh, it's murder, that was. I really liked it when they brought the bazookas. All you had to do is make sure you don't stand behind them. Because they got a bit of a flame behind them when they were let go, you know. But the Fiat, I was glad that we got rid of them when I went to Korea and we had...
That was the spring-loaded one. The spring-loaded one.
Yeah, terrible, terrible bleeding thing. Shooting at tanks, you know. So I only had sort of one training with that, and I didn't need any more, you know.
What about the Bren gun? You do that?
Yeah. We fired Bren guns, that seemed quite reasonable, you know. And that business about moving them around so the gases escape and that, you know. I still remember it, you know.
Did you have to learn to strip them down?
Yeah. And
what other weapons? Any other weapons?
No.
Maybe. Or hand grenades?
Yeah, of course, hand grenades, yeah. Throw that and duck. And make sure you throw it. We didn't have any of that stupid dropping them in the, people who wanted to throw it, he told them, you've got to throw this and get down behind there because there's 48 pieces plus the base plate whizzing around, so you don't want to get hit with them, do you? No, definitely not. It was like throwing a snowball, really, you know.
Did you learn to fuse them and the rest of it?
Yeah, you had to put so many second fuses in and then turn it up and then screw it down and then, okay, and then the sergeant says, now we're going to get rid of that over there now. I want you to throw the grenade so that it lands about there. And of course, most of them did, you know, some of them didn't. Some of them were a bit frightened, but I don't know, maybe some of them might have had a sort of an easier life, I suppose, you know.
What about mortars? Were you introduced to 2-inch or 3-inch?
No, we didn't get into mortars because mainly it was a 16-week basic training to let you were in the infantry. Mainly they wanted you to be able to fire a rifle. That was the main sort of thing there. Rifle and Bren gun were the main sort of thing to fire.
What about the Sten gun? You do that at all?
No, never fired a Sten, no.
Now, what about PT? I know you did a bit of a session in the morning, but generally, what different types of PT? Route marching, running, assault courses?
We used to do like a 5-mile run in the morning, and 5-mile, and then 5-mile back, and knackered, of course, yeah.
Were you fit when you went in from what?
I suppose I was reasonably fit, having been a scaffolder, you know what I mean? So I was a lot fitter than maybe... I suppose I was as fit as about half of them. The rest of them, I mean, some of them obviously had been in office work, you know. They'd been sitting down all the time, you know. So, and then I'd all my... And I like the... where they stick all the different things in front of you and say, right, you've got to climb that, you've got to run over that, you know. That was like the bombed houses to me, you know. We used to rip the floorboards up of bombed houses and run along on the rafters, you know. So nobody could chase this, you know. So that was pretty good, you know.
So you got fitter with the PT?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, without a doubt, yeah.
Now, any other training you did? Well, you know, in your typical day, any other sessions you might have?
No, the main thing I remember, that we always been short of money, you know. And and say, right, the window got broken there, so we're taking X amount of money off you because that window got broken. Yeah.
Barrack damages.
Barrack damages, exactly. Yeah.
Would you always have that? I mean, was that regular or?
Yeah, well, it all depends, you know, what got broken. You know, some of the boys would get out and they'd have a bit too much to drink and come in and bust something, you know, you'd have to pay for it.
You'd all pay for it?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's what I say.
Now, how did you get on with the rest of the recruits? You know, you were a young Southern Irish lad, there were some other Irish there, but yeah. How did you get on generally altogether?
Yeah, fine, no problem, you know. We're all in the same boat, you see, so I suppose in that way, because you're all in the same boat, you have to get on. And the fact is that we knew the Korean War was on, and you always think to yourself, you know, this bloke could save my life one day, so, you know.
Was there any bullying? It sounds like not, but were there any bullies?
I don't think so, you know. It's not something that sticks in my head, you know, so...
Did you make any special pals during that phase, you know?
Not in basic training so much. Probably.
Okay.
A Londoner from Haringey. Yeah. And another Londoner from Wood Green. And, of course, Christopher Kukuli. He was good. We used to like him, he'd give us a laugh.
And what about the NCOs, your instructors, how'd you get on with them?
Well, I suppose he was a bit like a school teacher. You realised that he had to do this to make you do it. You know, he had to be a bit of a bee, you know, for you to take any notice of him. Otherwise, if he'd have been too soft, you would have said, oh, well, it doesn't really matter. But it was up to him to make sure that you knew what he said was the law. And you had to do it. And that was all there was to it.
Was he fair?
Yeah, I think in his own way he was, you know.
Was there a lot of swearing amidst the shouting?
Oh, blimey, we always used to swear. I remember one of the blokes, after a 16-week, he went home and he was at the tea table and he said to his mother, pass the fucking salt. Because there was no doubt about it, every other word.
And that was all of you?
Absolutely all of us, yeah. Except some of them weren't, you know, maybe some of them were, I don't know, maybe religious, or maybe they come from a sort of a genteel family, you know, but, you know, a couple of them, I think.
But you took it up.
Yeah, it was easy for me, no problem. You know, I've been around that much, you know, and seen different things, and so I suppose it didn't make a lot of difference to me. And the only reason I was... I practice in Catholic is because my father was alive. Once he died, I didn't bother. You know, I'm a Christian as far as I'm concerned, you know. But I'm not, you know, when I get Jehovah Witnesses knocking on the door, I say to him, I don't look after my religion. I'm certainly not going to look after yours. So,
What about recreations? Would you go to the canteen, or what was it for the...
Yeah, we had a canteen, but of course only having, like, say, about 13 shillings to spend, that's not going to get you very far.
So what did the canteen offer? I mean...
Well, I suppose mainly, like, buns and that sort of thing, and fruitcake. That was... My mother used to like fruitcake, and I did like the fruitcake, you know.
Was there anything else? Was there things to do? You know, was there darts or billiards?
Yeah, we used
snooker?
To play darts a bit. A couple of the blokes would do a bit of weightlifting, you know. Someone would do that.
In the canteen?
Not in the canteen, back in the barracks, yeah.
But, I mean, what was it to do in the canteen?
In the canteen, so you play cards, you know, something like that. Or some of them play dominoes or... Anything, you know, really, just...
Was it a wet canteen? Could you get a pint if you wanted one in there?
Get a...
A pint.
A pint, yeah, well, you could do, but you'd maybe have one, you know, but I wasn't a great drinker, but I did like a smoke, you know, I mean, smoking since I was 14, you know.